Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Almost from its beginnings, Charlotte has sought out growth and development. We've been successful in those efforts and have witnessed boom times in the past, perhaps, but nothing to compare to what we are experiencing right now, I would wager. Construction cranes have once again become landmarks to our growth, and the real estate market is struggling to keep up with our surge in population. But the city continues to try and attract more business and investment and jobs. We didn't get Amazon's second North American headquarters because they said we didn't have the tech talent, but since being turned down, we have been nurturing a reputation as a tech hub and attracting more jobs and development as a result. Since business plays such an important role in our history and in our present, we're going to spend this hour examining all that's going on with three folks who follow these developments and who can put all of this into perspective. Katie Peralta has followed business developments for years in the pages of the Charlotte Observer. She is now senior editor at Charlotte Agenda. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. Tony Macia is editor of the Charlotte Ledger business newsletter. You can also hear his take on business every week on WFAE's Morning Edition's Bizworthy segment. Morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
And Ashley Fahey is real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome back.
Hi. Good morning.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Get to us through Facebook. Look for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks, and you can also watch us on Facebook Live. Let me start with Katie. We are a tech hub, evidently, I'm told. And as I said, Amazon said we weren't good enough to be their tech hub because we didn't have enough people, but we had been cultivating fintech for quite a while before that, and we continue to grow in our tech sector. So if we weren't good enough for Amazon, why have Lowe's and Better.com and a few other organizations decided to locate their tech departments here?
A number of reasons. They're all pointing to the growth of the millennial population, the highly educated millennial population, of course. The relative proximity to some of the largest and most well-known research universities in the country. The fact that Charlotte is relatively affordable. I mean, people are looking at Charlotte as kind of a more attractive place than, let's say, Silicon Valley for tech jobs. And also Charlotte's kind of redefining what tech jobs, you know, what that term really means. It's not your techie guy working on a computer in the basement of a large office building. It's actually fintech, you know, and every company these days has some sort of tech element. The banks, of course, have a huge tech arm. And I think that sector is how we're looking at technology in Charlotte is sort of being redefined.
You and I have both mentioned the word fintech. We've done a whole show or two or three on fintech. For the two people who didn't hear those shows, define it. What is fintech?
Financial technology.
How is it different from any other technology?
It's technology within the finance sector, I guess. I guess you could marry any word with tech and make it something tech related. And, you know, when you're looking at these types of jobs, it's sort of like, what is a tech job? I mean, do I have a tech job? I'm on my computer all day. Like, you know, it's sort of evolving. And I think it is interesting when Amazon, quote unquote, shunned Charlotte, you know, and we didn't make their top 20 list. They pointed to the fact that we didn't have enough tech talent. And I think at the time, the Charlotte Regional Partnership, what was then the Charlotte Regional Partnership, said that we had about 47,000 tech workers. And then there was this big sexy report out this summer from the Charlotte Regional Business Association, which is, of course, the merged regional partnership and the Charlotte Chamber, that pointed to a figure that was like, I think, 118,000 tech workers. I'm not sure how
really?
That
Figured. I saw 55,000.
It's all in how you define it. I mean, they say all tech-related jobs, I think, were around 115 or 130,000.
Well, what does that mean? She brought up a good point. What does it mean to have a tech job or to have a job in the tech sector? Are you a Geek Squad guy? What are you?
Well, like Katie said, you know, you work on a computer. I mean, we're talking into microphones right now. That's a technology, right? Does that count? I mean, it's a matter of how you, you know, just of how you define it. And they say the core tech job, your traditional tech jobs, that's where we're pretty much neck and neck, you know, with Raleigh. You know, you think of your software development and things like that. But anything, you know, that you have all these banks that basically are now saying that they're basically tech companies, but they just happen to hold a bunch of deposits.
Because they have an app? Is that what makes them
well,
a tech?
Well, you know, they have a whole bunch, you know, everybody loves those apps, right? And what is it? The Erica, the personal digital assistant, the Bank of America has. You know, they have a bunch of banks are unique in a sense that they have all the security behind it. You know, they're very conscious of making sure they don't put too much information out there that can be hacked. So they have very large tech departments. And, you know, one of the ways you get to be a tech hub is maybe you redefine your financial sector as a technology sector. So, you know, this is a trend we've seen going on for years, but it's certainly, you know, it's certainly pretty exciting for Charlotte.
Yeah, and I think as you see the banks, you know, they're rolling back on retail jobs. We just don't see, you know, people that are millennials or younger going to branches as often. Digital banking is just what people are doing now. So
yeah, I never go to a bank. Never.
I think these financial services companies and banks are seeing, okay, we really need to invest in our technology. We need to invest in, you know, people who can actually develop this software.
So is that what's driving the growth in technology jobs and the people being attracted here for technology jobs, Ashley? I mean, we're not Silicon Valley, but we are I think we're back to being the number two banking center in the country, and they're heavily, deeply entrenched in technology.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think that's what a lot of these companies are saying, is that they can get the workforce because a lot of these workers at the banks and financial services companies in Charlotte, they already have that background. They can say, okay, well, I can transfer these skills to whether it's a Better.com or Mitsubishi Financial Group or Moody's, which is also adding 100 plus tech jobs here. So I think these companies are saying there's an available pipeline that we can therefore either poach from other companies or be able to hire from universities, et cetera.
Is the growth in the number of people working in the tech sector in Charlotte because we are seeking those people and trying actively to build that sector, or is it just happening because it has to happen?
Well, I think it's because the jobs are here. I think that's really what it comes down to. There's actual jobs for people to go in and say, okay, I can actually, you know, get a job in development, software engineering, architecture, infrastructure, you name it. Those jobs are actually here now, which maybe a few years ago they weren't here as frequently. But I do think the banks over the past several years, maybe even decade or so, have been building up sort of their tech arm and saying, okay, well, we need our workers to be more entrenched in that world.
So we have all the banks. We have Lowe's and Better.com, which we'll talk about in a second, also locating technology operations here. AvidXchange is adding to its campus at the Music Factory. BB&T and SunTrust are planning their tech center, I think, uptown when they become Truist. Are most of the jobs sprouting up here then in the fintech sector? Or Lowe's is not a fintech company, are they? No.
No, I mean, what this really is, Mike, I mean, this is sort of a natural outgrowth of what we have here, that Charlotte for a long time has been very strong in financial services, and this is sort of how industries evolve. I mean, if you look at Silicon Valley, you know, obviously 30, 40 years ago, they didn't have app developers. You know, it was mostly they were building semiconductors for the most part, and then, you know, you switch over and they start developing software, and then you have the internet. I mean, so, you know, out there we've seen a lot of evolution, and I think you're seeing the same thing here with Charlotte kind of playing to its strengths of financial services, and the direction of this industry is sort of migrating to be much more technology driven. So I think that's a lot of what's attracting it. As far as whether, you know, what's driving it, I think certainly, you know, local economic development people, they love having these kind of jobs. But also it's just a natural outgrowth of sort of what Charlotte's strengths have
been.
Charlotte for a long time was a hub for a lot of really well-known retailers. I mean, from Family Dollar to Harris Teeter to Belk, and of course Lowe's is still up the road. You know, obviously things have changed with the first three companies I named, but Lowe's it's interesting. The biggest tech employer right now, or the biggest company hiring for the most tech jobs, is a retailer. And Lowe's is changing the kind of jobs they're looking for right now. They're looking for, you know, engineers to design these systems that make sure every store is well stocked at all times, because that's going to increase their efficiencies, that's going to increase their margins, et cetera. And I think another interesting thing about Lowe's is that, you know, they are moving down to Southend, and it's the kind of stereotypical millennial neighborhood, and, you know, it's close to the light rail and all of that. And this was kind of the most high profile announcement in recent months, when it comes to tech jobs, because they made this announcement alongside the news that they will be building this giant, like 23-story tower. We mm-hmm. obviously don't have any towers that size outside of Uptown. But at the time, I remember Marvin Ellison, Lowe's CEO, said something that I think has really stuck, and it seems to be a theme in, you know, the conversation about Lowe's being, or Charlotte being a tech hub. He said the hope is to become a beacon to attract other world-class companies seeking technology talent to Charlotte. And I think that that's what we're seeing now. You know, other companies are kind of taking note. They're like, oh, what's going on in Charlotte?
Well, let's compare us to, I mean, Silicon Valley in California and Seattle, which is the home of Microsoft and Amazon, I think Amazon.
Yes.
They are the big kahuna in all of this, but there have to be other pockets around the country other than just Charlotte doing this or trying to do this. Where do we fit into all of that in terms of size, impact, desirability for the people who would be taking those jobs, et cetera? Where do we fit in? Are we just kidding ourselves when we call ourselves a tech center? Because it's still all in Silicon Valley and Seattle.
I don't think that, and maybe comparing Charlotte to Silicon Valley and Seattle isn't totally what we should be doing, because in reality, we're competing with kind of our peer-sized cities like Nashville, Raleigh, Atlanta, Austin, and these cities are hiring tech jobs in huge numbers the same way we are.
And this sector seems to be really important to Charlotte, to the decision makers in Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken. Why? Why is this sector so important?
I mean, the cynical side of me is like, just to show Amazon, you know?
Hey, it might be part of it.
It could be. But I also think they realize that this is where the future is. I mean, the future is not in, like, Ashley, you were saying, like, you know, retail banking branches, and the future isn't in, like, you know, kind of like old school, low skilled, you know, tech jobs. I think they're realizing, like, we have to get ahead of the curve and make a name for ourselves as, you know, a place to grow in tech jobs.
I mean, there's no doubt that every city in the country would like to think of itself as a tech center. I mean, that's a good message to send out. I mean, it's a clean industry. These are high paying jobs. I mean, I think if you do, I mean, just a little bit of a reality check. I mean, I think if you do look at the number of technology jobs here versus some of those that you mentioned, you know, you could even throw in more, you know, Austin, Dallas,
even
Atlanta,
Raleigh.
Boston, you know, you can keep going on. As far as who's got more tech jobs, I mean, there's no doubt that that's something that that leaders here really want to pursue, and it plays to Charlotte's strengths, which makes a lot of sense. But you know, if I would bet, if you were to ask you know, tech leaders you know, nationally, what are the biggest tech hubs, I don't know if Charlotte would be in that conversation.
No, I think the big sell, at least locally, has been Charlotte is a discount. Like, companies who are based in New York, who have major operations in New York, and even maybe a Silicon Valley, have spent a lot of money on their real estate. Their wages have to be much higher just because the cost of living is so much higher. So I think what some of the, I guess, sale from economic development officials here is, come to Charlotte. Like, you've got the talent, you've got the workforce, and we're a lot cheaper than other
cities. Are people working in other areas of the country willing to take a pay cut to come here because the cost of living is less? They can buy a house and make less money. Are they willing to do that?
I think you're starting to see that shift, because areas like San Francisco in particular have just gotten so unreasonably expensive for a lot of people that a lot of people just aren't willing to do a 90-minute commute to work, aren't willing to spend, you know, more than 50% of their paycheck on housing. So I think you are starting to see, again, that exodus to southeastern cities like Charlotte, and I think that will continue.
So the question is, can you buy a house in Charlotte?
Well.
we'll come back and talk about that and Better.com, among other things, as we talk about business and development in Charlotte on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Hey y'all, this is Tommy Tomlinson. On this week's episode of Southbound, we talked to Rhiannon Giddens. She's one of the commentators on Kim Burns' new documentary on country music. And she's a musician who explores roots music of all kinds. You can find this and every episode of Southbound on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and WFAE.org.
Support for Southbound comes from Southeast Radiation Oncology Group.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about business and development unrelenting in Charlotte with Katie Peralta, senior editor of the Charlotte Agenda, Tony Macia, editor of the Charlotte Ledger, and Ashley Fahey, real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Better.com. I have never heard of this until preparing for this program, but evidently they are here, and they employ about 20 people in Charlotte, but within 5 years, they say, they will expand to 1,000 people. What do they do, and why are they so confident that they'll go from 20 to 1,000 people? Ashley.
So they are a digital mortgage lender, I guess. And
Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans?
So yes, it's a little similar to that, I guess, business line, if you will. The whole idea is to digitize the mortgage process so, you know, I guess users can get a mortgage done, approved much faster than you would the old school way with paper and faxing and all that other stuff. That's what the CEO told me when I talked to him a couple weeks ago. They have been growing really quickly, but they only launched in 2016. Mm-hmm. So they're a really new company. They are truly in startup mode right now.
And aren't they located in the WeWork building in South End?
Yes.
And WeWork, correct me if I'm wrong, is one of those office share facilities where if you're a startup, it's smart because you go in there, you don't have to have high overhead, and you can share office space with others. But
yes.
Is that the kind of space that inspires investors with confidence?
Well, I mean, WeWork has been in a lot of news lately, and with the CEO stepping down a couple weeks ago, I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to watch looking ahead. It's kind of chaos right now. But yes, they are in WeWork, and so are a lot of these companies we're talking about today, including Mitsubishi Financial Group and Moody's. Huh. They're all in WeWork right now. And that's kind of an interesting piece of it because they are not eligible for incentives if they go in a WeWork-type space because the whole thing with the local incentives program is that it's based on property tax and real investment in
right.
real property. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, so Better.com CEO says 1,000 employees in 5 years. And he's confident in that projection, he says, because there's so much demand for his product and there's so much of the market they haven't tapped yet.
But it can't be filled by Rocket Mortgage?
Well, that's the big question is, can you fulfill? And he wants to do 2,000 to 3,000 jobs across the country by that point, not
right.
just in Charlotte.
Okay.
That's the big question is, can he fulfill those job requirements? And without incentives attached to them, there's really no benchmark for him to say.
So if they grow to 1,000 people, they can't be working at WeWork.
Well, no.
At WeWork, so they'll have to have real estate.
Absolutely.
Will that then make them eligible?
Yes, then they could get incentives. Yes, but the city is trying to pilot this program where a company going into a WeWork type space might be eligible for that type of investment. We'll just have to see how that goes. It's something they want to launch in the next couple months.
And they have some pretty big backers. Ally Financial and Goldman Sachs are in their corner.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and Ally's involvement was a big reason why they opened an office here.
Okay. So Charlotte has been growing its reputation as a city that attracts young people. Roughly 80% of Better.com's employees are in their 20s. What is it about Charlotte? Why are we so attractive to young people? Katie, or Tony, or anybody, Ashley. You're all looking at me like, please don't ask me this question.
I'm a little bit out of that demographic, but certainly I think it's become a much more attractive place over the last 20 years. If you look at, you know, the draws that there are here, I mean, you look at the South End, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about South End, but, you know, South End, there's just a lot to do. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, bars and restaurants, and there's a lively night scene. It wasn't always that way. You know, people who have been here for a while, you know, remember in 1994 when we had the NCAA tournament here that the city had to set up, you know, temporary bars.
Fake bars
because the downtown or the uptown closed at 5 o'clock on weeknights. It's amazing to see just the transformation. I think that's very appealing to a lot of young people.
I'm glad you brought that up because there was a time when you could roll a tank down Tryon Street after 5 o'clock and not hit anything. And when they brought the All-Star game to Charlotte that first time, They did. They took these empty storefronts and put bars and I guess other kinds of fun arcades and things like that in these places for the week. They were pop-ups.
Right.
That was it. And they should go back to that. I liked it.
But, you know, they don't have to do that anymore. There are tons of these things.
There's
they're opening every single day.
We moved here when I was in high school. So I was 17. You know, that was like 2005 or something, so you can do the math to guess my age. But we had our post prom at this entertainment. I can't remember the name of it. It's gonna bother me. But we had this our post prom at this like entertainment bar thing, no alcohol, in the place where All American Pub is now in Southend. And I remember at the time, my parents were like, "Ooh, that's a very dangerous neighborhood. Like, why would the school pick that?" And it's funny looking back in college, I remember thinking, I'm never moving back to Charlotte. This place is so lame. And I don't plan to leave anytime soon now. It's just, I mean, it's crazy how much things have changed. And I think, you know, yes, we have a huge problem with affordability. And yes, there's a lot of construction and there's just a lot of change going on right now. But comparatively speaking, like us compared to Chicago, New York, San Fran, any of the places young people move to after college, this is a much more affordable place to be, and it's much more reasonable to start a family here and to actually buy a home and plant roots. And I mean, that's why I moved back. It's why a lot of my friends are now moving back after having lived in Chicago and D.C. It's just an easier place to live, honestly.
Tim on Twitter writes, I understand growth is inevitable, but the endless construction is exhausting. Everywhere you turn, it's blocked, congested, torn up roads that never end. Does it all have to happen at once, and will it ever end? Relief is needed. It does seem, as we grow it by leaps and bounds, that there is very little planning in terms of how they will close streets to accommodate traffic. It seems like, oh, we're just going to do it. We're going to do it tomorrow. We're not going to give you any warning. We're going to do it. And we're going to do it in every square block going down X street. It doesn't seem to be thought out. Is it? That's a different topic. I know that, but okay. I just wanted to, I'm echoing his concerns. You also report, Tony, that Charlotte is on pace to surpass Raleigh. We're going to move off the tech sector, but we are on pace to surpass Raleigh in the number of tech jobs. If that happens, is the result going to be anything more than simply bragging rights?
Well, I think just on that very specific question, I think it's mostly bragging rights. I mean, in terms of, you know, there's always been this rivalry sort of with Raleigh and RTP, and for Charlotte to be able to kind of puff its chest and say, we have more tech jobs than Raleigh, I think is a nice talking point, and it's something that, you know, that leaders can go out and say as they try to attract more jobs here. I mean, you know, it goes to some of the points we raised earlier that, you know, as far as Charlotte being an attractive place for tech jobs and for millennials, and, you know, that's just another proof point.
So you may not have heard of Better.com, but people have certainly heard of Moody's. And you, I think, Ashley, referenced Moody's. They're moving tech jobs here with 40 different job postings, I think, in Charlotte. Is 40 significant? I mean, what kind of jobs are these? What do they pay?
So it's 40 right now. The chief technology officer of Moody Investor Services is actually based in Charlotte. He used to work at Ally Financial. He was a CTO there for a number of years. So they have 40 working in Charlotte now. The goal is to hire another 100 over the next 3 to 6 months. And at that point, they'll assess, which could be code for we might need incentives at that point. We might be moving out of WeWork at that point. I don't quite know what that means. But Moody's is based in New York. And even though it wasn't explicitly said, we know the cost of living is much higher there. And we are seeing several Wall Street type firms or those who work in financial services moving jobs down south. We know AllianceBernstein looked at Charlotte seriously, but is going to Nashville for their headquarters. We know a bunch of other groups. Honeywell was based in New Jersey. So I think, again, it's just speaking to this discount, cost of living, cost of leasing office space, et cetera, although the main tech hub for Moody's will still be in New York.
So let's move on to something completely different. Years ago, when we were going after the Hornets, somebody somewhere, some writer, reporter in a newspaper somewhere said, the only franchise Charlotte will ever get is McDonald's. And then we got the Hornets, and then we got the Panthers. And now we are on the second owner of the Panthers, David Tepper. He's been here, what, a year as the owner? A little over a year.
Yeah.
And already having a major impact on the city and the region. He's building a headquarters and a practice facility in Rock Hill that will pump money into the economy of that part of South Carolina. Now he's working on getting a Major League Soccer franchise, for which he will need a stadium improvement package funded in part by us. We knew that at some point in the future he would be coming to the city and saying, we need to have a new football stadium with a retractable roof. Charlotte certainly wants to keep the Panthers. So is pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into stadium improvements for soccer something the city is going to be willing to do? Because he wants this. And he'll get it if he wants it.
I think you're right. I think they'll get it. I think he'll get what he wants.
And we'll ante up?
I think they'll figure out a way. I think they probably have some creative ways that they can do soccer and they can do football, the stadium improvements. I mean, you know, there's obviously the major pot of money would be the hospitality taxes, the hotel, motel, you know, occupancy tax, right. Those sorts of things. But I think they have some creative ways they might be able to unearth some of this money without saying we're going to raise everybody's taxes.
Well, we talked last week on the news roundup, Katie, when you were here, that there were some questions about what was discussed in a closed door meeting by Charlotte City Council, and there was a lot of controversy about that from some members of council about having this information leak out. And what leaked out was that what he's going to be asking for is $110 to $200 million for these improvements for soccer. Has that figure changed in the last couple of days at all?
Not to my knowledge. And these discussions, to my understanding, are ongoing. And this plan, or this process, I guess, is accelerated because the plan is to have the current city council make this decision, vote on this plan before December 2nd, when the new council comes in. So before that time, I think that council will figure out or will discuss some way, and I think they'll approve, some way to have the city foot the bill for this. At the same time, eventually they could split the cost with the county or with the state. As we know, the state is characteristically unwilling to put money toward professional stadium improvements or new professional stadiums. So I'm not sure if that would actually happen, especially not in like a timely fashion like David Tepper wants it to. But, you know, the county has a lot on its plate right now as far as funding. But
does it make sense to put $200 million into a stadium that is likely to meet the wrecking ball in 2 or 3 years?
I don't think 2 or 3 years.
You think it's going to be longer than that?
Yes.
Well, as you know, you were all excited because Billy Joel is coming. I think you were. I don't know.
you can't knock it down before Billy Joel comes, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you don't have a roof on it, concerts get rained out. It's not football. They don't play in the rain. So if you want to do concerts, and he does, he wants this to be. David Tepper has said, and I think he's right, that Charlotte needs to come to grips with the fact that we are the sports and entertainment capital of the Carolinas. And if you're going to be that, you got to have a place to put big concerts, and that stadium would be the place if it has a roof.
The conversation that's ongoing with City Council right now is about the soccer improvements, only about soccer. And that's why things are so...
That's short-sighted?
Well, that's what I think that's going to be a big, you know, sticking point, right? Because some people are going to say, why on earth are we going to throw $200 million at this issue right now as like a Band-Aid, essentially, you know, when we're going to look maybe 7 to 10 years down the road in order to build a new stadium entirely that could cost $2.5 billion.
So it's difficult to gauge the economic impact of these sports facilities. Some economists think they're the second coming. Other economists say not so much. They don't really add anything to the value of a city. But if you turn a stadium into a football, soccer, music venue, is that more, can you calculate the value and the impact on the local economy more accurately? Does it become something that really is a jewel in the crown?
There are certainly people that can calculate that. I mean, the question is how precise are those and how many liberties are you taking in estimating the effect? I mean, certainly the argument is that Charlotte will see a benefit, so Charlotte should pony up some money. But I think you're right that a lot of economists, I think, look at that and say, well, I don't know if economically this really makes a whole lot of sense.
At the same time, city boosters would point to the Panthers and the Hornets and any other professional franchise we have and say, look, we are a world-class city. You know, we do have these professional teams, and it is sort of a talking point, right?
There is a pool of money at the municipal level for this. The hospitality tax, I think, Tony, you alluded to that. Hotel, motel, prepare food, and rental car taxes are dedicated into these kinds of things. But that money is also earmarked for upkeep on the vaunted NASCAR Hall of Fame, possible renovations to Discovery Place, and to the Convention Center, which we're also told is an economic engine for the city, but it won't be if we don't make these improvements. Can we afford to fund all of that and improvements to the stadium and then go back and dip into it again for a new stadium?
I think that's sort of the big question mark and the sticking point there. I don't know that there's enough
money. Can we afford not to?
Well, these are all very good questions that city leaders are sort of asking themselves, you know?
Yeah, and we have seen cost overruns. I mean, we've seen with the convention center, $16.5 million over budget. You know, we're seeing, you know, council going back and saying, well, we have to give more money to this because the construction estimate was off. We don't know what Discovery Place is going to ask. We don't know what some of these other projects are going to be requesting from city council. So I think once we actually hear what all of these are going to cost and what the ask, I guess, is going to be of council and this tourism tax, then we can have a clearer picture of, can we afford this?
It's like every other part of government. You know, there are a lot of needs and a finite amount of money available to them. So it's a question, you know, if I'm a city leader, how do you prioritize? You can't just, I don't think you can just say yes to everything and expect that the money, that Charlotte's going to keep growing and just throwing off enough money that, to allow you to do all of these things without finding, as they say, another source of revenue.
So we talked a bit on Friday, Katie, about what happens if David Tepper snags Major League Soccer, what happens to the Independents, our minor league soccer team, for which I believe, if they're not already underway, improvements on Memorial Stadium are imminent. What happens to them and to that project? Can we support two soccer teams?
Well, first of all, that project is happening no matter what, and the Independents have signed a 10-year lease on Memorial Stadium.
Will they be here in 10 years if we get Major League Soccer?
That would be, I mean, with experts I've spoken with, the answer would be yes, because I think there would be a logical way for the Independents to work alongside David Tepper's MLS team as some sort of affiliate. I mean, Jim McFilliamy, who's the managing partner of the Independents, is really deep-rooted in the soccer community here. And, you know, they have like a youth league. He wants to start a women's team. And they're really well-known in the area. And there's a really strong soccer following already of the Independents. Their ticket sales have slumped in recent years. But at the same time, they think that playing in Memorial Stadium will help that.
Yep.
Jim is not talking to David Tepper at this time about how they would work together. But other cities have made it work before, you know, acting as some sort of affiliate for an MLS team. They could be, they could have some sort of developmental program. It's entirely possible.
Katie Peralta is with the Charlotte Agenda, Tony Macia, the Charlotte Ledger, and Ashley Fahey, the Charlotte Business Journal. We've taken a break. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about business and development in Charlotte, which never ends. Katie Peralta is here from the Charlotte Agenda, where she is the senior editor. Tony Messina is editor of the Charlotte Ledger. And you can also hear him on our Bizworthy segment on Morning Edition. What day of the week is that?
Thursday mornings.
You know that. Thursday mornings. Oh, good, you show up for that. Ashley Fahey is real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Kim emails, please bring up rampant destruction of mature trees and green space. Charlotte is losing her quality of life, air quality, flood mitigation, environmental cooling, etc. We are becoming concrete city versus tree city, which we, you know, tree used to be in our logo years ago. There needs to be thoughtful integration of development with our natural world. Currently, developers are being given carte blanche to pave over paradise, to paraphrase Joni Mitchell. What about that?
was not prepared for that question.
Sorry. Is there somebody watching over this?
Well, the city is currently evaluating changes to its tree ordinance. And
in what way?
Well, so the proposed changes would impact what they deem urban areas, which is your uptowns, your Plaza Midwoods, Dilworth, the sort of urban neighborhoods around uptown. And what they're saying is we want to provide more flexibility for developers to do like trees and parks on parking top to parking decks, you know, sort of change the rules a bit. They say they would not result in a net loss of trees and change the requirements for how many trees you must save or keep on site, but it would change the types of things that would be allowed, things you might see like urban parks on sites, things like that. But at the public hearing, which was a couple weeks ago, several people did come up and say, public has not had enough time to review this. Like, this is going to impact our tree canopy negatively. We're already not going to hit the 50% tree canopy goal by 2050, which has been the longstanding goal. But the arborist said that's probably not possible anymore just because of the rate of development in Charlotte right now.
At one point, and I don't remember the exact figure, we used to talk about how Charlotte is losing the equivalent of two, I think, or three football fields of trees a week or a day or something like that to development. This was years ago. Do we have any figure on that?
I don't know about that one, but I mean, I do know that developers are doing infill, and that just typically means really small sites. The tree save requirement on that might just be a couple of trees. I mean, if it's only 10 or 15% of the site, that's a very small amount. And
I guess I would just jump in and say, you know, we are also, I think, seeing a movement toward people who want to buy properties or want to live in apartments that are close to green space. You're seeing a build out of different greenways. You're seeing, you know, developers maybe being a little more conscious in the past of making sure that, you know, they have at least some outdoor areas, dog parks or dog runs. I don't know if we count those as parks, you know, but I think there is a little bit more attention to that.
A ficus tree in the lobby. That's a... All right. The development is happening so quickly and so robustly that it's really is changing the character of some long time Charlotte neighborhoods, and residents have considered these neighborhoods to be gems. Central Avenue and the Plaza Midwood area has had this funky vibe for a very long time, one that you really can't find anywhere else. I suppose South End had it for 15 minutes and now it's gone corporate. But recently they announced that that shopping center on the corner of Pecan Avenue and Central Avenue went up for sale. This is where Bistro Le Bon and Five Guys and the Roasting Company and a CVS and an ABC store and other stores are located. To me, there's nothing that really says funky about that or even special about that, except maybe the restaurants in them. What will likely happen if this property does get sold, and how will that likely impact the rest of that neighborhood?
Well, it's a pretty big parcel right there. You know, as far as the availability of parcels that are that big, it's about 12 acres, and to find something that big that close to the downtown is pretty significant. I mean, it could be a few years, I think, before we see that land redeveloped. The tenants that are in there have leases that go on for, you know, a number of years. There are some historic buildings in the back of the property, some older brick buildings that are about a century old. But I mean, I think it would be, I think what you'll see is some sort of creative multi-use type development there. I mean, people are concerned, oh, they're just going to throw up the standard issue apartment towers. I think it's an opportunity to do something a little more creative. Now, I don't think anybody's saying that particular area, that particular spot is a historic spot that must save this surface parking lot. But, you know, I think it's an opportunity to do something creative.
It is, as you point out, where Billy Graham accepted Jesus as a teenager in 1934.
Correct.
It was a tent revival in where that parking lot is located now. This whole Central Avenue corridor has experienced a lot of growth and development, and which is changing the character. And are conversations being had about whether that's good or not? I mean, some people may not like the funky vibe or the when you look at the rest of the sparkling New South City, it looks kind of bedraggled. But that's charming in some people's minds, and that's fine. But when you put a 5 or 6 story brand new apartment that has that bears no resemblance to the rest of the neighborhood, and there are bunches of them going up out there, what does that do to the character of the neighborhood? And is anybody concerned about that?
I think there are plenty of people that are concerned about it. I think it's just, you know, a function of the market. Again, as the areas like Plaza Midwood, NoDA become more and more popular, the land value goes up, you know, the nearby transit line.
What I'm hearing you say is that it's inevitable and there's no stopping it. And so if you don't like what's happening, just give up because you're not going to win.
Well,
that's what I'm hearing you say.
It's just a function of the market. But I do think the city maybe could incentivize small businesses if they want to stay in those kinds of areas. There's options to consider on that, but I think the way things are going now, the cost to lease space, whether it's retail office space in these areas with new construction and everything else, is just really high. So I think what you're seeing is a lot of these longtime businesses can't afford to stay in the neighborhood and they get displaced.
Well, that's what happened with Dairy Queen, which is going after, I think, 69 years in the single location. It's going soon. The Penguin closed for different reasons, but it's gone. Which was a iconic Charlotte old-time eatery. When you put a new development on this 12-acre piece of property that we started talking about, is that going to encourage development creep? In other words, well, look at that. That's brand new. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, I mean, as Ashley said, I mean, it's a function of land values. And so at some point it makes sense to have a better use. This is the developer's point of view. It makes sense to have a better use of a piece of property rather than a 60-year-old Dairy Queen.
So is that what it's all about? It is not about the character of a neighborhood. It's not about what has attracted people to that neighborhood in the first place. It's about, oh, look, there are a lot of people who came here. They may have been attracted to this old stuff, but let's get rid of that because it's too valuable now, and we'll build new stuff, and they'll stay. Will they?
It's the friction. I mean, it's like the developers run this town, and they are making the decisions, and people are kind of falling in line. And at first, there will be a fight, you know, oh, the loss of this 70-year-old, you know, cool family-owned business is sad, but oh. Okay, a Jenny's would be cool, or whatever it is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Jenny's. But I think I would. I loved the interview that QC Nerve did with the former owner of Dish, the restaurant in Plaza Midwood that was sold. And she just had some really great quotes about, you know, they didn't plan out this neighborhood at all. It used to have this, like, really kind of funky vibe, and it's just overcrowded with stuff now and franchises and just stuff, and it's exhausting. So, yes, there is quite a strong desire among a large but maybe not as powerful group of people who wants the neighborhood to maintain its character and its funkiness, but the ones with the big wallets are the developers.
But when they come in and do that, do they kill the goose that laid the golden egg? Do they care? Does the city care?
I mean, I think that they're starting to realize that they're going to get a pretty bad reputation if they wipe out. Like, imagine if a developer came in and just bulldozed the Thirsty Beaver.
Right.
The greatest middle finger, you know, in Plaza Midwood or whatever it is.
Love
that quote. That was the owner of a Soul that said
this
that.
This is a little dive bar in the middle of new development that refused to sell, and mm-hmm. So it's anachronistic now.
Yeah, it's like quintessential Plaza Midwood,
right. Yeah.
Refusing to change itself to make way for, you know,
it's like
beige
the guy
development.
In Up, right? The guy with the balloons in Up.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
But you know, you are seeing parts of town though. I think that, you know, there's this question of what's historic versus what's just old. You have that business district there in Plaza Midwood that's all brick. You know, you got Nova's Bakery. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, barbershops. You got some of the tattoo places. I don't think those buildings, maybe this is naive on my part, I don't think those buildings will ever go away. At the same time, you're seeing a lot of developers do things with some of these older buildings in town. I know, you know, Ashley and Katie have written a lot about, you know, this trend of adaptive reuse where they take these old textile mills that are just basically sitting vacant, turn them into really interesting things. So we are seeing, there are some encouraging signs, but I don't think we're going to be saving 100% of everything.
So Karen on Facebook writes, Plaza Midwood is losing its quirkiness. Gentrification always scrubs clean what made an area cool to begin with. Sad. Central's apartments are hideous and boring. More breweries, eateries that belly up in a year, no parking. Does that sum it up for you?
It's a lot of what I've heard.
Okay. We've been talking about and watching and waiting for the redevelopment of Charlotte's Second Ward, which is going to be called Brooklyn Village. It would take away most of Marshall Park, the land that the park occupies. belongs to the county at the moment because it was given to the county in a land swap by the city for the land that now the baseball stadium sits on, and the city gave them 10 years or until 2019 to sell it or do something with it. Well, it's 2019 and they haven't done anything with it yet, so the city is thinking about either taking it back or extending that that opportunity for 10 more years. What has been the holdup?
So this has been a very long project, and it would take me probably 30 minutes to explain all the nuances. But to sum it up pretty quickly, in 2016, there was an RFP by the county to say, we want to redevelop this. We want it to be, affordable housing. We want it to have commercial development, et cetera, on what is currently Bob Walton Plaza and Marshall Park. And so they selected BK Partners, which is consisted of the People's Corporation, is a New York developer, and a local group named Conformity. They didn't reach a final redevelopment agreement until 2018, but there's been a lot of, angst and anxiety over this project because some people have said there's not enough affordable housing, you're taking away all the green space because they want to go from 5 acres to about 1.6 acres of green space. There's been some other concerns about, minority businesses having a place in this, because as we know, this was a historic Black neighborhood that was raised during urban renewal in the 1960s by the city. So the issue is, okay, we want to extend this agreement to 2029, and that's making some city council go, well, wait a second, is it going to take that long for this to get developed? Do we want to sign off on an agreement that would extend the agreement made in 2007 another 10 years? Mm-hmm. And they have to make a decision before the end of the year, otherwise it goes back to the city.
So it seems that there are a number of people who are having second thoughts, particularly about Marshall Park, about losing all of that green space. Is that likely to have any impact on altering the plans? Could they leave Marshall Park and do something that resembles what they were going to do in the first place?
They could do a plan, and officials have said they will do a plan, but it will look very different. Marshall Park is 5 acres. The entire site's 17, so take away 5 acres, that's substantially shrinking the project. It's not clear what that project would look like, but the developers have both said, yes, this would definitely change the project.
Are we likely to hear a resolution to this before the end of the year, or is the city likely to extend the 10-year another 10 years?
It seemed like at the meeting a couple weeks ago, council was like, we just need more information. We need to know what this actually means. We need to look at it in committee, and so it got referred to a committee, and we'll hopefully be back before the end of the year for a vote.
So Ballantyne, which didn't exist, 25 years ago?
Yeah,
I'm not sure when Ballantyne became
mid-90s.
A thing. The owner of Ballantyne is now planning for some massive changes, including a mixed development thing behind the Ballantyne Hotel. They're calling this Ballantyne Center, and unlike Plaza Midwood and Brooklyn Village, I would imagine there's very little opposition to this out there, or am I wrong?
I think there are a lot of concerns out there. there are a ton of concerns. Maybe not enough to kill it, but there's always concerns about traffic. There's always concerns about crowded schools. I mean, you're talking about adding a tremendous number of apartments.
What would this project bring that Ballantyne does not already have?
Well, Ballantyne has been traditionally thought of as a suburban location that other areas of town kind of poke fun at. You might be familiar with this, Mike. because it's sort of a sleep. It's the place where you move when you've had maybe some kids and you like to go to bed at 10 as opposed to staying out till 2. Out in South End. So it's sort of the quieter
you
part
have to,
of town.
If you worked uptown, you have to get up at 3 to make it downtown.
Well, the
by
traffic
8.
Is traffic can be pretty bad. But traditionally, it's been a suburban office park, single-family homes. They're seeing what's going on in the rest of town. They're seeing what's going on in South End. They're seeing Ray Farms, Waverly, and so they want a piece of that kind of urban action. They want to make it a suburban area, make it a little more urban.
And somebody said they wanted to make this an alternative to South Park. Are they putting shopping in there, too?
Yeah, they're talking about putting in retail. They're talking about all the buzzwords you hear. Okay. Make it walkable, green space, and it's a huge area.
And they want to attract millennials, but I thought millennials wanted to live in downtown areas where they can walk to everything.
Well, the thinking is, can you build? They're building, a couple towers down there that are going to have significant office components. That if you can make it a job center, more of a job center, and you put in a bunch of housing, you can make that its own little area, kind of like Buckhead in Atlanta, maybe.
Northwood Raven, I think, was just announced this morning that they're going to put the first residential development in a corporate park, which will include a 16-story tower and 5-story mid-rise building with 212 upscale apartments in total. That's separate from what we've been talking about.
Right. I mean, this is, they had announced this project a few months ago. They hadn't given a lot of the details on it. Mm-hmm. But now, yesterday, they went and they fleshed out some of those details. It's the third tower in Ballantyne announced in the last 6 months.
This is going to happen. Ballantyne's going to be a ring city. And they wanted to secede at some point.
Yeah, they talked about that eight years ago.
Yeah.
Well, there's a feeling among people in Ballantyne that they're not getting everything that they're putting in.
I think every area feels that. Tony Mesilla, Ashley Fahey, Katie Peralta. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.